You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. Becomes infectious.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm host James Marcina, a.k.a. Def Jam Gundy. May know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 331. On today's show, we're going to hand out a report card for Tim Hardaway Jr. He of the extremely controversial contract. How did he do in year one? We're going to talk about it with Ashwin Ramnath of Posting and Toasting. We're going to wrap up our report cards this week. On Thursday, we're going to do Frank, and on Sunday, we're going to do Kristaps Porzingis, so that way we can start looking toward the future. All right, it's time to finish this thing up already. Quick reminder before we start the show, voicemail bag. Call us at 929-377-5103, and we will get your voicemail on the air and respond to it. It's a lot of fun. I suggest you do it. Also, send us recommendations of bars to watch the Knicks in, and we'll put them on our list. All right, Tim Hardaway Jr., report card time. Hit him, Marv!
Yes!
So we're here today to talk about Tim Hardaway Jr., the year that was, hand out a report card for what he did on the court. And before we do that, I just want to give a little context into the environment in which Tim Hardaway Jr. entered this season. He was signed in the leadership vacuum after the firing of Phil Jackson and the hiring of Scott Perry, and if there's one thing The Sopranos has taught us, it's that you never want a leadership vacuum. He was signed to a contract that was for 4 years, $71 million, just about, an average of roughly $17.7 per year. This colors every discussion about Tim Hardaway Jr., so I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way. And, you know, as it should on some level, because you have to live up to the value of your contract if you want to be a good NBA team. But that being said, generally speaking, why don't we just start with how do you do, given that context, Ashwin? Do you think he was a disaster, smash hit, something in between?
I think somewhere in between. I don't know. He's such a difficult player to evaluate. There were so, like, I don't know. His bad nights are so bad. Like, they're so bad. I wrote a little season review of his probably a month ago, and he just had, I mean, honestly, it's one of the worst seven-game performances I've ever witnessed, and I would imagine that's ever occurred for, like, a starting player who played a lot of minutes. He went 5 of 44 from 3, and he shot 24 of 93 from the field overall. And he gets in his own head, too, like, all the time. You can always see him kind of pressing way too hard. Yes. And then he gets really frustrated with himself and everybody. And it's just like, I don't know, he's a little too emo sometimes.
I can't say I disagree. And I think that's, as much as I am just sick of talking about his contract, I mean, I think it comes to the fore right away when you're talking about his inconsistency, because I do think that weighed on him. I don't know if he made any public statements about wanting to live up to it, but it seemed pretty clear to armchair quarterback or whatever you call that amateur psychiatry what's going on inside his head there. And I just think it's tough. There were a lot of extenuating circumstances that weren't just his contract that I think contributed to that. And I think one of those things was injuries. His injury struggles, I mean, that's almost like 1B to the 1A of his contract when you talk about what happened with Hardaway this year. He played in just a couple quick stats on that. Played in 57 games this past season, which means he missed 25, which means he played in 69.5% of missed games. Nice. He had a couple different things going on. One was that major injury toward the beginning of the season. I think it was in December. He missed basically all of December with it.
Yeah,
was
a foot injury.
That was like weird stress reaction at first, and then it was... They never came out and like kind of said exactly what it was, which sort of annoyed me. It was a little bit of like a vestigial tale of the Knicks' prior regime of weird secrecy for no reason. Because to me, it's like, you know, the guy's got a leg injury. It's no secret. So like, why don't you just define what it is? It's not the NFL. People aren't going to now like start tackling him. If they, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I think what happened with that is, and this is just a complete guess, but I don't think they wanted to put a timetable on it because they just were. I think it's like it's one of those injuries where it just like how you respond to, because he didn't get a surgery. He didn't get surgery, if I remember correctly. It was just like, you know, basically just resting.
Yeah.
So I think they didn't want to say what it was so that there was no timetable and so that like there was no, you know, he has to come back by this date or like the world is over kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was really weird for sure either way.
It was a strange organizational approach. I don't want to harp too much on it, but it was something that I didn't love about this season. I think the Perry Mills regime has been fairly solid so far, but that was something that I found a little bit odd. But so that was one thing that he was dealing with. He also struggled with an ankle injury in the second half of the season. He might have rested a little bit more than he would have because they were in tank mode, but he missed a fair amount of time with, I believe it was a right ankle sprain. And to, you know, just kind of add more context to his weird season and another reason why he might be pressing a little bit, due to his injury and Kristaps' injury, he only played 30 games with Kristaps out of those 57 games that he played. So half the season he played without him. And I think that, you know, made him heap even more pressure upon himself. 'Cause he's just, no matter what you think about his contract, it's not the contract that you give to the best player on your team, right? Like, it's not a max contract.
No, it's not.
And he's not a max player. Like, even, you know,
it's like the contract you might give to the third best player on your team.
Yes. And, you know, I think I'm, like, in the upper half, if there's a spectrum of, like, Tim Hardaway, like, hate and love. I think he can still, you know, spoiler alert, be an excellent contributor at his salary level. But he was thrust into this role of kind of number one guy this past season after KP went down, which he's just not meant to be. And I think he pressed and also... I think teams were able to focus on him. And yeah, if Tim Hardaway is your number one guy that you're focusing on, you know, you're going to be able to stop him. you know, like he's not that guy to carry your offense, even though he does have a pretty solid offensive game on a couple different levels. And one final thing to kind of like set this context for his weird season and another reason why I think he might be pressing was the positional strangeness with him playing kind of like undersized three, you know, him and Courtney Lee sort of like sharing duties there. I think that might have benefited him a little bit on offense sometimes, but I think it was definitely a problem on defense for him. I mean, and I need an official ruling on this. If you are normally a two and you're playing the three, is that playing up a position or down a position?
I always call that playing up a position.
You do. See, I would default to down, but I don't, like, believe in it strongly.
Yeah. Playing up. I mean, also, like, you're stupid, so.
I just hang up. I should just let the podcast go silent for, like, 2 minutes after that and let people. It'll be my ode to David Chase's brilliance. How much of him playing, wait, what'd you say, up?
Up a position.
Because they're bigger? Is that your reasoning?
No, because it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Why do I think down? What the hell is the matter with me? anyway. No.
Maybe you just need a butt heavy.
I really do. I didn't drink yesterday, so I'm struggling. I want to get to some things that I like about his offensive game from this past season. But before I do that, I just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, something that I appreciated about Tim Hardaway Jr.
Was his three-point shot selection?
Well, how I'd like to phrase it would be his spectacular Maury Ball-style shot chart. And by that I mean he is one of the few Knicks who took a bunch of threes, for better or worse. We'll get to the worst part, but one thing I did like, just like situationally, anecdotally, I think there were nights where he fell in love with this and it was infuriating, but not afraid to pull the trigger on a three in transition. Not always a great play, but it's one of those more new school things that my detractors will say I'm in love with, that I do think is smart when the defense isn't set. I do think you should do that sometimes to keep them off balance. It's the kind of thing that you didn't see a lot of the Knicks this past year, but Hardaway certainly wasn't afraid to pull that trigger. And I think he wound up kind of being middle of the road in terms of frequency at the rim. But I think on his better nights, and he really had kind of like a schizophrenic season from game to game. It was, I've mentioned this in the podcast before, I thought it was like pretty Starksy. But I think on his better nights, he got to the rim a lot. Like, that's when he was playing well, when he was attacking and aggressive. And part of that was that
Raptors game. Like, he was awesome in that game. And he just kept, he drove so much in that game. And, you know, one thing, and because, you know, anytime I come in the pod, we have to have a little, there are like two people that we always need to have a little hate session on, being Enes Kanter and Jeff Hornacek. Sure. One thing I really never understood, or there's really no reasoning for it, is we just didn't like, we didn't run enough side pick and roll with Hardaway and KP. Okay. And like, it's just very conceptual, but I like using him in side pick and roll more because, you know, when you run a high pick and roll, like, yeah, it's a play that, like, you know, you can go anywhere with the ball, so it's a little bit harder for the defense, but it's also, like, putting a lot more responsibility on the ball handler because breaking down a defense from the top of the key, you know, you're essentially, you have to break down the entire defense, whereas, like, if you're running it from the side, there's just, like, less reads for you to make. And, you know, it's just like, it's a little bit easier. So that was just, and that was like one thing in that Raptors game. I think Zach, he wrote like an awesome piece after that game. But, you know, if you go through the highlights, like he had in the fourth quarter, that's all we did. And they had no response for it. And obviously a lot of that is because of KP's gravity. But like, you know, you still have to be able to take advantage of it. And of our ball handlers last year, like he was the only one that could take advantage of it consistently and get to the rim, because, you know, Cornelie would just like stop 15 feet out, pull up,
or go for the world's most acrobatic bullshit layup because he didn't want to draw any contact, God forbid. Tim Hardaway Jr., I mean, like, he was just, you know, he was at least the outline of his offensive game is modern in a way that most of the Knicks were not. You know, that goes to shot selection. He did do a decent job at drawing fouls. Like, okay. Like, not great. Not terrible. He made his foul shots at, like, an okay clip, 82%. He shot an average number of mid-range shots, but, you know, compared to the league average, but he for wings. But he shot them at an above-average rate, so, like, not terrible, and a vast improvement on every other Knick who was in, like, the 190 billionth percentile of mid-range frequency. You know, so like he almost had to defy his coach to like even get that far down in terms of his frequency of mid-range shots. And I think he was one of the few Knicks who at least was allowed to see the court who was aggressive trying to get out in transition.
Yeah, I mean, he's awesome in transition. Yeah. Like, I have no idea what the, you know, percentile or any of that shit is, but like,
I didn't look it up. Just, so I was like, fuck, sometimes that's bullshit. Just you saw it when he got out there.
Yeah, I mean, he shot I'm thinking like mostly basically when he went out in transition and he actually got to the rim, he finished well, right? Because he shot like 64% from the rim this year. So we can just assume that, like, generally speaking, his issues in transition are when he, like, he gets in a Steph Curry mode and it's like, no, dude, stop.
No, totally. I mean, the thing is, like, I don't even know if he's the kind of guy, because of all these extenuating circumstances we talked about.
This is the fucking type of guy he is. This is like the player he is, though, is because, like, all right, I've watched this guy.
You think he'll be a reckless gunner no matter what?
No.
If he's a third banana, or let's say, you know, the Knicks signed Kyrie Irving, and they've got KP, and then Kevin Knox develops and whatever. Like, you think he's really going to just be like, nah, it's my game?
No. See, I don't mean it like that. Okay. I actually think that, like, the reason I'm pretty sure Hornacek told him, you know, you got to get your shots up, because, like, you're the number two guy. Like, he knew that honestly, if he didn't get shots up, like, you know, people sit there and, like, the contract, whatever, like, let's ignore the contract for now, because that's not what we're talking about. But just, like, you know, I never really watched a lot of these games and felt like, wow, he's taking way too many shots. I mean, I thought there were a lot of times he took stupid shots, mm-hmm. but I was never like, man, I can't believe he got 16 shots up tonight. Like, why wasn't he feeding fucking Courtney Lee? Like, you know, like, right. I had no problem with the volume. So I don't think that's a big issue. Like, I think that his volume will adjust for, like, you know, the Knicks sign Kyrie Irving and grant my wish. That would be great. But, like, I think he'll be fine in that role. And I think he'll be happy to be a third banana. Like, I don't think he has an ego like that. But I mean more in terms of, like, how he fluctuates in his shooting is just, like, that's how he's always been. Mm-hmm. If you go back to, like, I watched him in college. Like, I'm going to pull up his college stats. Because he had, like, you know, he had 1 year. His first year was really good.
Because you're a Michigan guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. And so, God, I gotta hold up. I'm pulling it up right now. Okay, so yeah, this is ridiculous. His first year, shoots 42% from the field overall, 36.7% from three. Second year, 41.8% from the field, 28.3% from three.
Oh my god.
Third year, 43.7% from the field, 37.4% from three. Mm. Like, he's a guy that literally have off years. Like, he is just, it's so weird because when you actually watch him shoot, like, his stroke is really good.
Yeah, he looks the part.
Yeah, like, he looks like, you know, he can shoot. And then, you know, you see those times where he gets hot and it's like, you know, like, you're like, all right, this guy can shoot. But, you know, and I think obviously some of it this year was like he took way too many, like, just stupid off the dribble pull-up Hezzy Jimbos. he did a little bit too much of that. But, like, you know, I think his percentage will come up. I'm almost positive he's going to shoot better from three next year. I'm actually not too worried about that, and which is why I think, like...
You think that's because he's been working with super trainer Chris Brickley? Do you have that confidence?
Oh, did he put out an Instagram?
Black Ops.
Back in the lab.
I live for this shit. Oh my god.
I just think he'll shoot better because, like, that's kind of what tends to happen with him.
Yeah, I mean, because, like,
even if you look at his NBA stats, it's been like that, right? Like, he shot 36% from three first year, 34% from three second year, 34% basically again, third year, 36%. Fourth year, and then last year was so, like, you know, he's always been between like 34-36%, and last year is just like a severe outlier. So I feel fairly confident it's going to come back up into that, like, normal 34-36% range, and then, you know, like, his true shooting gets up to 55-56, and then people are probably a little bit less like, this is the worst contract ever, ha ha, lol, Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, he shot 31.7% from downtown. I don't know if he said that out loud during this, but so,
I mean, I just hope that he can be as good as, you know, somebody like a real baller, like Alan Crabb.
Or Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, or like D'Angelo Russell, dude. That guy is so sick.
Oh, man, he's nasty.
And he's such a good teammate.
He really is. He pulls people together. He just creates this inclusive community anywhere he goes, you know?
Yeah. It's like kind of like that, just what I love about the Nets. It's like they're just making moves. They're just making moves, and they're just running circles around the rest of the league.
The Nets, when you're here, you're family. Or that might be Olive Garden, I'm not sure. But Tim Hardaway Jr., just to round out the three-point stats, he shot 7.2 threes per game, which, like, sounds like a lot, but it was actually only 61st percentile for wings in terms of frequency, given the volume of shots that he put up. The problem really there was just his
percentage. Historically bad percentage for that volume, though, right?
Yes. Yes. But I will say, like, it's... like, I don't think he's a 32% three-point shooter. You know what I mean? And so, if this slump, for whatever reason, lasts, like, that long, I don't necessarily blame him for keeping... there were some games, like, on a game-by-game basis, it's like, all right, stop it. But if his game is partially the three-point shot... you know, I don't have too much. I don't have as much of a problem with his shot selection as some people, I guess I'll say.
No, it's like I guess. I thought, like, he probably took, like, two stupid threes per game that he shouldn't have, right? So, like, that's basically what the difference is. And ultimately, like, I just don't care that he, like, I mean, I care that he sucked at shooting them, but I don't care that he did take them, because it's like, again, who the fuck on this team is going to take shots? Like, who did I even want to take shots off the dribble other than him? Like, it was like, it was basically KP, him, or, like, you know, let's play Ennis ball for
right.
fucking
I mean, but that's why I also think I kind of give him credit, because I really do think we talked about during the Ennis Cantor one, John and I, about how we thought Ennis, like, really stat chases to some degree. I feel like Hardaway knows it's not good. You know, like, I almost felt like he was doing it for the team. He's like, well, someone's got to take these shots. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, and I'm willing to sacrifice some percentage just to, like, get these shots up. Like, so, like,
well, he was always one of those guys that, like, he would get the shot off. Like, you know, if you have the inbound on your hoop with 0.9 seconds left,
he'd take it.
Like, Hardaway's not, he's not the guy that's, like, gotta he doesn't do, like, the fake, you know, shoot it after the buzzer thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, that always affects your percentages a bit. And, like, I'm not saying that accounts for everything. Obviously, it doesn't.
No.
I'm just saying it shows, like, yeah. And I, in general, like, you know, with him, watching him last year, I never felt he was trying to... I mean, he was trying to get numbers, but he was trying to get numbers because he, like, that's what I think his role was instructed from a coach.
Like, the team would be down by, you know, 25 at the half, and he'd be like, all right, I'm going to take a bunch of threes in the third quarter. Like, he'd try to gun him back in. Not always, but, like, I think that was a hefty portion of the time. That kind
I mean,
of
seriously, when KP went out, what the hell else were we going to do?
It was him or Beasley, basically, and then Burke, yeah. He came on, you know. But, like, I just, you know, if you're thinking about him as someone who you might want to have stick around for the future, like, and we're talking about his scoring, I do think there were some positives, even though his three-point shooting was, at the end of the day, you still have to put up the results. He didn't. Like, that's not good. It's a demerit against him this past season. But he did have some explosive scoring nights. If you're thinking about him as, like, your third-best player, he scored a career-high 39 against the Wolves. He scored 30 points or more 5 times this past season. He scored 20 or more 18 times, you know, out of... whatever I said it was,
37, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he averaged 17.5 per game, which I usually don't do the per game averages, but, like, you know, they need someone to score. He put up some points. I think he still could potentially be pretty valuable in that, like, third best player type role. So, I mean, that's my thought on his scoring. And I just want to say about...
his playmaking, his ball handling is way better. His playmaking is... you know, it's actually, like, you know, whatever, screw this, I'm just going to say it. I thought, like, I even argued for it at the time. Like, I thought when we, I was fine with trading him when we did trade him. And, like, I thought, you know, like, that getting a first-round pick for him at that time, that was a good value. So I was fine with that good trade. But I never understood, like, the Knicks fans that watched him that year and were just like, this guy has no hope. Like, just dump him for, like, a protected second rounder. And it's like, dude, if you just look at his numbers from that year, I mean, sure, his efficiency, his scoring efficiency sucked, but, like, okay, I mean, what do you expect when he's being asked to be, like, the second option next to Langston Galloway, you know? Like, that's what's going to happen. And if you just look at his numbers, even from that year, like, they're not, like, he did show improvement in his, you know, overall contributions. Like, if you just look at his per 100 from rookie year to second year, per 100, 3.4 rebounds, first year, 1.9 assists, second year, 4.9 rebounds, 4.0 assists. Like, he did show growth. His ball handling sucked. Like, it was much worse then, though.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, some of the, like, sometimes you get numbers because you got, have to get numbers on a team, and, like, you know, we were the, basically the worst team in the league that year, so obviously his numbers did not impact on a team level that well. Whereas, like, now I feel like when I watch him, I'm not saying he's amazing or anything, but, like, I think he does have a positive impact on the team. Now you can argue, like, it's not enough of a positive impact for his salary, sure, but yes, he is, like, a plus player for the Knicks.
I agree. Yeah.
And I think people get, like, so, like, personally butthurt over these, over his contract, and it's like, look, man, like, I understand the contract sucks, but if you, if, like, you can only talk about the contract and, like, not actually just, you know, try to be a little bit objective in evaluating, okay, what did he do for the team? Like, anybody can, it's easy to say, like, yeah, he's not worth the contract. Like, I'm not even trying to really argue that. I'm just saying, like, you know, the team was, what, they were 3.3 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor than they were with him off of it. Yep. Per cleaning the glass, like, that's, that was a 73rd percentile for all wings. Like, so clearly, like, you know, and like, again, we're a bad team, the players that are coming in for him aren't as good, blah 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 blah, but, you know, if you look at it for his career numbers, it's pretty much in line with what he did in Atlanta last year too. So, and they were a playoff team, and he started for them, so, like, yeah, it's not as if
he can be a starter on a very good team, you know.
Yeah.
And I, like, to just kind of round out my thoughts on this annoying contract talk, you got to forget the fact that he was on the Knicks before, because it was a different regime. Like, once that happens, you can't, like, I'm not even saying they should have re-signed him or whatever, but you can't worry about the fact that you could no longer get him on. If it was the same GM and you let him go and then you re-sign him for that super inflated contract and you could have had his rookie contract, yes, that's shameful. But it wasn't the same GM. So it's like a different set of circumstances, and you've got to just kind of forget that he was even on the Knicks. I know that's hard.
And, like, ultimately Scott Perry isn't the one that gave him the contract. So, like, I understand why it needs to be talked about, and I understand why people don't like the contract. But I also think you have to be able to look at it and realize, like, okay, look, like, there are mistakes. There are, like, bad moves that teams make, and then they're, like, you know, Knicks-style disasters. And it's like, anytime the Knicks do something that isn't good or, like, isn't, you know, perfectly efficient and in line with what, like, you know, fucking NBA Twitter thinks is automatically a genius move anytime somebody does something, like,
right,
that doesn't make it. I mean, this isn't, to me, this is not a contract that's, like, an absolute disaster and will never have any chance of moving it. Like, you know, I know it's easy to sit, like, act. Well, Dennis Schroeder got traded, all right? And Dennis Schroeder is garbage,
yeah,
right? Like, they're, like, the fact of the matter is, with the way the cap isn't jumping that much anymore, and there's just, like, expiring contracts are going to have value. And, like, there are teams that are well over the cap that, like, you know, like Oklahoma City, right? The reason they made that trade is because they knew that, like, for them, even if they got dumped Melo's entire contract, even if they just dumped the contract, like, they're still over the cap, right? And so, you know, how can you, so you kind of turn that expiring contract into, okay, Dennis Schroeder sucks as a starter, but, like, as a bench player, like, he's definitely a net positive for them,
yeah,
over what they had. And so it's like, all right, you take more years, but you, like, shave, you know, you get what I'm saying, though.
I do,
it's,
yeah. Like, so, but, like, just, this isn't really about, you know, how he performed this past year, although I guess it's part of it. Let's say people complain about the contract because they're like, well, now we can't sign all the free agents this next season. Do you think they could move his contract?
Definitely.
Move him for an expiring, like, how easy, yes, do you think that would
if
be?
If he has, if let's just say he has whatever, like, whatever his career numbers before last year or something, like, they were, you know, basically he was like 55 true shooting career before this last season. Let's say he, like, sustains his, so he's what, 55 true shooting, he maintains his gains that he made as, like, a rebounder, ball handler, playmaker, whatever, all that stuff. Like, yeah, I think some team is definitely willing to take that contract even if it's for, like, you know, like, I don't think you need to attach a first round pick to that contract. I think teams,
yeah, I don't either. I mean, like, I think you'd be looking for someone who wants him, and I think he's valuable. I mean, like you said, they were 3.3 points better with him on than off. You know, if you're talking about how he played with, like, actual good players on the Knicks, of which there are very few, when he played with KP, it was only 30 games together. But lineups with those two had a plus 3.1 net rating. Like, he was part of a good, you know, he was part of the solution on some level.
I mean, he played the entire year out of position.
Yes.
Like, I'm not trying to make excuses for him because I don't think that he was worth his contract, right? I want to be, like, very clear about that. Like, he was not worth that contract last season. So, like, I'm not arguing that he is worth it or anything. But, like, you know, you also have to look at what the context of the team was. And it's like, yeah, like, he played next to absolute garbage most of the year, played out of position. Like, half the year KP was out. You know, like, he was injured. He played through injuries. Like, you could tell, like, there were multiple times he would, especially when, like, at the second half of the year, you know, he missed games with that sprained ankle, and, like, yeah, he probably could have played through it, but he did play through that injury for, like, multiple games. There were a couple games where he, you know, he'd get hurt, and it looked like he was done for that game, and probably for a while, and then he'd, like, be out there the next night.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I think that stuff matters. Like, it shows that he has some kind of, like, I don't know. Like, I think it showed some toughness. I mean, people, yeah, of course, like, the money that he got offered helps, but I think it shows some, like, kind of resiliency in him that he came back to New York, because a lot of guys, I mean, New York, like, everybody knows New York's not some easy, it's not an easy place to play. Shit, he knows it. Like, if you go on Twitter after a game, it's just, like, millions of people bitching about his contract, bitching about him. It's like,
so,
yeah, and it's like, I get it, but, you know, like I said, it's just not an easy place to play, and he did come back, and of course the money is a significant motivating factor, but, like, I don't know, when I watched him play, I didn't see a guy that seemed, like, overwhelmed by New York,
no.
And that does matter, and, like, there are guys we've watched in New York that are definitely overwhelmed by playing there.
Yeah,
and
he definitely embraced it. That was a real positive to see, and just to kind of backtrack a little bit, we've kind of touched on you know, how he was very sort of one-dimensional at first when he came into the league, and he's made some improvements. And he did diversify his contributions last year. Like, it wasn't just the scoring. It wasn't anything overwhelming, you know, but, like, for a wing, there were nights where he grabbed a ton of rebounds. I think you mentioned his rebounding per 100 and the increases there, but he had just about 4 rebounds a game, which was, like, 46th percentile for a wing. Like, not incredible, but it wasn't like if he wasn't scoring, he wasn't doing anything. And then he moved the ball well. He had just about 2.7 assists per game, which was 70th percentile for a wing. Didn't really turn the ball over much. He averaged a little over a steal per game, which is, like, a little bit above average. Stayed out of foul trouble. So, like, there were a lot of, like, small things that, you know, were positives, if not overwhelming. And that's kind of, like, that's sort of my overall, like, read on his season last year. Like, a lot of good stuff, none of it great, a couple very bad things, turning out, like, sort of an average-ish, maybe slightly below average, like, starting.
And he's only 26. Like, he's only 26 still.
Yeah.
So,
I think, well, that was going to be sort of one question before we hand this over to the gods. Who am I handing this over to before we end this thing? How much better do you think he can get still? Like, how far away from a peak do you think he is?
I mean, I think, like, just the biggest thing for him, it would be improving shot selection, which seems, you know, I don't know if he will or not, but it is a correctable thing. I feel like he could probably do it better. The one thing I really wish he would improve, and I wish this basically for everybody on the Knicks, is just, like, because especially for him, because he does get to the rim so much, is just being able to draw fouls more. Because he is a good free throw shooter, and obviously that would be a really easy way for him to score points efficiently. I don't know. It's really hard for me to say how much better I think he can get. I think his peak is basically something like, you know, 16 points, like, good efficiency, not elite efficiency. Like 35% 3-point shooter, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, basically, like, the line he put up last year, but more efficient and less scoring volume.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I think that's like a fine. It's still not worth that contract because he's not like some plus defender or anything. But it's that to me is a contract that is movable, and there are certain teams in certain situations that might be willing. Like, for I'll just give you an example. Let's say like next summer, none of the top free agents want to like go to the Knicks, right? Mm-hmm. Like, now you know you guys are a year away or something, whatever it is. So in that case, like, we're not really a player on the market. If Houston can't move Ryan Anderson, like, I'm pretty sure we could trade Tim Hardaway like 2 years, whatever, $34 million or whatever it would be, for like 1 year, 20 of Ryan Anderson. I think that you could probably pull something. And I don't know, like, if that's necessarily the specific trade, but like, there are trades like that. I think you can easily put together that a team that's competitive but is over the cap and doesn't really have like easy ways to improve, they're like, okay, well, we'll take on a kind of a bloated contract because it is an easy upgrade for us personnel wise versus anything else that we can do. So yeah, like, I think it's movable in certain contexts. I don't know if you're ever going to get an asset back for him, but he could be like part of a package deal or something like that too. I don't know. I just don't think it's, to me, it's just not a contract that like it's, I don't know, maybe as a Knicks fan, I just have like, I've seen so many atrocious contracts. I'm just more like, yeah, that's like, you know, whatever.
I think he can roughly play up to the value of it. You know, I don't think he's ever going to greatly exceed it, but I think he can give them roughly that production. And that also depends on how much the cap jumps, you know, like, because if he's a smaller percentage of that cap,
it right, becomes, right, right.
You know, right, all that. And I don't know off the top of my head, like, when it's scheduled to go up how much, but I know we've got like a, what is it, a $9 million jump, something like that, next
year? Yeah, I think it's supposed to go up to 120 next year.
Yeah, and then who knows after that, yeah. And, you know, if there'll be a lock or whatever, you know. But right. I think he could roughly live up to it. But getting back to this season, wrapping up the show, if he had a grade, his output, his effort, whatever, his aura, his soul, what letter grade would you put on this?
Like a C+?
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
I wanted to go B minus, and I was like, I can't do it.
I was thinking B minus too, but I was like, nah, you can't shoot. You can't shoot below the Mendoza line from three and like and get.
That's
and get.
What I said. There's a lot of circumstances. At the end of the day, though, he jacked up those shots and he didn't make them. So that's a real demerit. But I don't know. I liked his demeanor. Sometimes he got too emotional and whatever. But I think he wanted the spotlight for better or worse. Like you said,
I mean, to me, he at least like he gives a shit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like maybe after like the year before where it was like watching Melo and Rose collectively give like no fucks at all. Maybe I'm just like thankful to see multiple guys in the team care. But like, and like, honestly, even as much as I like bitch about Ennis and like Courtney Lee, like I generally thought those two, like, at least they were like, I mean, Lee kind of like mailed it in after KP got hurt, which I actually don't mind because like whatever. But you know, I think generally those two, like, and just everybody on the team more or less was like a pro last year, right? And like right. They easily could have just like, as soon as KP went down, they easily could have just been like, you know what, screw it. Like, no, I mean, they just sucked on their own because it was a terrible team. But I don't think there weren't too many nights where I like watched them play and was like, oh man, these guys just aren't even here tonight. They're not even trying to show up. So, and he was definitely one of the guys that, you know, if he was on the floor, I always felt like, you know, for better or worse, he was going to like try to make something happen. And a lot of times that was worse, but that's also like the kind of team we have. So
I think we've both set a record, mostly Mave, of the phrase for better or worse.
Have you said that a lot?
That's the Hardaway season from this past. I've said it like.
I mean, that's times. basically is the Hardaway season.
Yeah, it's, and for if people are trying to peek into my mind and how I grade these guys, I start with as high a grade as possible and work my way down until I can like say it to myself with a straight face. So I was like, A, no, lots of laughs. B, definitely not. Can we sneak in a B minus? And I was like, no, I can't do it. Can't look at myself in the mirror and do it. C plus, I can do it.
You know what? I'm just going to give him a C. I think it's a C.
C plus.
That's fine. All
right. Well, we're going to diverge greatly. But thank you again, as always, for joining us, Ashwin. Why don't you let the people know where they can find you online?
You can find me at Schwinnypoo on Twitter. And I haven't been writing much lately, but I plan on hopefully getting back to it soon and having some stuff up on Posting and Toasting. So
check them out. Good stuff. Thanks again.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's it. Thank you guys so much for listening to Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie. At NBA Injury Report for jokes and jokes and jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. Easier said than done. I don't always do this, but try. Spay and neuter your pets. No excuses. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it right down. Doo-doo smells bad. Always salt the pasta water. Take that for data. Biggie's the best rapper of all time. Peace.